RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Nick Davenport is the founder and managing director of Lanaco, an Auckland-based manufacturer creating high-performance filter media using wool technology. Filters that have been used by NASA for astronauts in space. And Nick is here to talk about a new association with Blue Air, a leading Swedish air purifier company. And I think they're owned by Unilever. And Nick joins us on RCR. Nick, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
How big is the air filtration business, Nick?
Air filtration, the actual total business is hundreds of billions of dollars. The part that we work in is the air filter media, which is disposable stuff. It's the stuff that goes into a filter, which takes the gunk out of whatever you're cleaning, and then you throw it away when it's finished.
Right. And
that's about 8 to 10 billion New Zealand dollars a year worth
really?
Of business.
Mm. And I'm going to ask you about wool and filtration in just a moment, but what is the current sort of technology? Is it more sort of synthetic-based filtration, is it?
Yeah, most of it's oil-based plastics, microfibers, and some mineral glass fibers and air filtration. That's the predominant one. Most people around the world were wearing plastic filters around their faces during COVID.
Ah,
and throwing
okay.
them away.
Hmm. Yep. Okay, our audience is interested in this. I don't know how you asked this question, how fine was the filtering in that?
I guess in terms of, we classify it in terms of the needs for respiratory filtration. So you want to take right. out viruses and bacteria and small harmful particles. The next level of filtration is called molecular filtration, which takes out gases, so chlorine or whatever it is. So it's a step down from that. So it's particle filter technology, removes fine particles in the air, and a bacteria or a virus is a small particle.
Yeah, really small, eh? Viruses, massively small.
Yep.
And they are disposable. So how have those filters been disposed of? What, just landfills, or are they polluting?
Yeah, they basically end up in the sea or in landfill where they last forever, or they lie around somewhere else, or somebody burns them and whatever they do. But really, there is no use for them practically because there's no collection system.
Yeah. How long have you been at it, Nick?
Over 12 years now, developing this platform. So yeah. We've been working on it for a long time.
So wool comes into the picture now, which is a lot more environmentally friendly, I'm imagining.
Yeah, well, it grows on sunlight and water, which is quite good. And there's lots of it in New Zealand. And air filters use relatively small amounts of wool to do an awful lot of work. So in the jargon, it's sustainable, it's renewable, it's natural. And the technology that we've developed is an electrostatic technology where we mix wool into bio-based fiber, plant fiber, and create a static charge. So it acts like a dust magnet, but doesn't have a lot of resistance to airflow. And that's a double benefit, huge double benefit.
How long has that taken to develop? Whose idea was it? Was it your idea?
The idea for this business was my idea, but I picked up on some technology by accident in another business that I was working on years ago. An American brought to me some Australian technology, which we picked up upon and developed and have advanced it since then to quite a large extent, to the extent that we've bred sheep to create fiber to create product that performs the best in the world.
Actually bred sheep for the purpose.
Well, I didn't physically do it.
Nick, you breed sheep as well?
we established a breeding program to understand the deep science behind wool fiber, and now we've incorporated the learnings from that breeding program into a string of genetics which underpin our technology.
Yeah, what sort of R&D goes into developing a technology like this? What sort of steps? How do you plan out the steps? How does it work?
It doesn't. It always ends up bigger than you think it's going to be. So and you learn from mistakes. So the thing is not to repeat your mistakes twice. So you go down deep and try and decide what bits you've got to solve. So that's you hire scientists, you hire the best people around the world to define your problem and find a solution to your problem, and then you pay a lot of money. So we've invested over $12 million to get to the stage where we've got. Now we're at sort of at the point where we probably wanted to be about 5 or 6 years ago. Through various things, we're here where we are now.
There must have been some moments along the way, some eureka moments where, hey, it's working. It's working good.
Oh, look, yeah, no, well, the very first look at it, we thought this is quite interesting, but because we knew nothing about the industry, we just blundered along, learning everything from first principles. And it's not till you get outside of your little world and start exploring the world and see how you fit in the world that you start to notice. And then we purchased some of the best testing equipment in the world, and then started doing shootout comparisons with competitor products. And we thought, oh, this is, it's actually quite good. And then over the last few years, we were doing the global trade show circuit, where we end up sending our product to competitors and others, and they go, wow, this is quite good. And so we have been able to develop high performance technology in a vacuum, but we are now much more in touch with our technology ecosystem globally. So that you mentioned earlier about the NASA story, right? We got a phone call out of the blue, just like this. Hello, are you interested in this technology project at NASA? We said, which NASA? Not the real one. They said, yeah, no, the real one. Yeah. And we said, yeah, okay. We thought it was a joke, but it wasn't. And after 2 years, the product was selected and it's being used to protect astronauts on the next manned mission to the moon. Now, wow. Nobody's been to the moon since 1972, and I remember it well. And
I sort of remember it too.
Thing. So the risk profile for that is huge. So that's the best possible technological endorsement you can get. There's no sustainability requirements for going to the moon. So, yeah, we're pretty chuffed.
Yeah, well, that's congratulations. That's really impressive.
It's kind of by accident, but no, it's just because this is the thing. You just work things from first principles and out it comes. And we keep still having eureka moments. We had one here two days ago, and I can't tell you what it is, though.
But, oh, okay, fair enough. But what you're saying is one of your products will make it to the moon.
It's already been around the moon. So
it's been around the moon already. Okay.
It's already been around the moon. They sent the rocket up without people in it. The next one goes up.
Oh, I remember. Yep.
And then the third shot, they stick the people and they land on the moon. So and they walk around again, which is great.
That is so cool. All right. And it's New Zealand wool too, is it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what this is, because we had to pick an opportunity that had sort of global reach. The application had to have value, right? So health, this is linked to people's health. So if you said to somebody, what's your health worth? How much would you be prepared to protect your health from harmful things that you're breathing? They say, oh, quite a lot. That translates to a reasonable dollar compared to other uses for wool. So initially, that was not what we would call a volume play. It was quite small. But now that we're moving into these markets in the US and Europe, these small markets in our little local market are massive offshore. So we can actually now start to make a difference to sheep farming in the future. That's our plan. And we're really happy to be doing that.
We've done a few interviews on wool here on RCR since we've been going. And they've been around really the wool industry being in the doldrums compared to how it used to be when the wool board was out there doing marketing and,
back in the old days.
Back in the old days, yeah. You'd drive past warehouses full of wool. I used to do that on the way to school every morning. I remember that. You could smell it.
Yeah. Normally, worked in the wool stores during the holidays.
There you go. The talk has been about finding new markets, new uses, and kind of getting over the problem of synthetic fibre sort of taking over. What sort of potential is there in what you're talking about at scale, volume-wise? Because you just mentioned the sheep farmers. I mean, how much wool could this use in the end?
Potentially tens of thousands of tons. New Zealand exports about 150,000 tons of wool a year, of which most of that's the strong coarse wool, which we don't use. But what we're trying to do is create something which both rewards a farmer in the long run for investing in their efforts and the usage of their land, so that the land can be used for growing food and fibre, not trees, so that...
You're referring to the carbon sinks there, the pine trees?
Well, whether they're the wilding pines or the intentionally planted pine trees to reduce, to give people carbon banks to buy or whatever. Yeah. So it's, I've got to not be cynical here, but we truly do make a difference in terms of, and I mentioned the energy before and the low resistance of the technology that we've got. Low resistance means it's easy to breathe through, right? But if you're not breathing through it, you've got a fan blowing air through it, and that fan runs on energy. And that fan typically runs in your air conditioning system all day, all night, doesn't stop, burning up energy. So when we make a filter, and if we can reduce the energy by one tiny increment, basically the amount of energy it saves translates directly to carbon. So you can solve the carbon problem, the methane problem of growing sheep by exporting this stuff and getting an energy benefit at the user end. It's called a carbon handprint. So we're starting to build some tools around this because we do have a performance advantage in terms of energy. That energy is directly carbon. And if you buy a product and use it, you're doing good. Yeah. So you can't say that about milk powder. You're not chewing up any carbon by eating milk powder or meat. But with wool, you certainly can. And that's what we're excited about.
Could that go into the offset kind of picture then, ultimately?
Well, it's kind of an offset. So there's two things that we're doing. One, what we're doing with our farm supply contracts over time, they're going to become more and more incentive and locked into methane reduction because that's what the market demands. You know, you can't have innovation without a customer. And we are connected to customers in the global markets, just like Unilever. And they say, you know, we want sustainable products, but if we have a high carbon product, we're going to get caned. So it's very much important for us to understand our carbon footprint and what we can do for their carbon story at the other end. That's the currency of the market. And we can provide a very, very useful tool for them to make a big difference. Justifiable, verifiable, quantifiable.
How does the relationship with, I know it's Blue Air, owned by Unilever, but ultimately Unilever, they're one of the biggest companies in the world, aren't they?
They are one of the, they're quite big, and they've been around a long time too. It's a Dutch-British company.
Yeah, well, they're big anyway, I know that. How do you go about generating a relationship with a company of that size?
There's two things. One, we have this internet thing, and we have our people search for us, and they find look for a sustainable solution, and they can find it. That's one handle. The other one is we turn up at trade shows around the world,
right,
and hang our shingle and tell our story. And that takes time. So it's only since COVID that we've been doing the trade show circuit, and since we've been doing that, we're now on the world stage. So we travel around the shows first, saying, what does it look like? Who are these people that we are going to be competing against? And then we start positioning ourselves to differentiate ourselves, and now it's actually working. It's quite that simple.
Yeah. Hmm. And what a great relationship. So that means what? That the products of Blue Air will start, or have they already?
They will start transitioning. Obviously, they've got hundreds of products out there in the market. They sell millions of air purifiers around the world. Yep. They've been doing it since one of the very first to start in air purifiers. And, of course, it's really taken off since COVID. They'll start replacing their new designs, which have got more renewable, more recyclable materials built into them. And our filter media is complementary.
Is it all right doing business from New Zealand to the world as someone who's doing it? Is there anything that gets in the way? Is there anything that you prefer to be
Well, everything gets in the way, but we don't have any choice, Paul.
Yeah, no, I know that, but you know, it maybe could run smoother, or you know, is it red tape could be eliminated, making life easier without causing issues.
We've built quite a substantial, what we call as a whole supply chain, right from the wool to the manufacturing to the marketing, all here off our own bat, and from the support from small parts of industry and principally from our investors. And to get investors on board to take something like this and really make a difference, New Zealand companies are typically undervalued. And so if we take that valuation offshore, they say, why are you so cheap? You can't be serious. And they don't look at you. So we're stuck in this chasm for investment opportunity. So all we do is continue to tell a good story. We have to deliver results. And obviously during the COVID period, it was very, very difficult for us to deliver results. Now that we're out of that, we're starting to deliver results. And from those results, then we can hopefully attract investors.
Yeah, during that period, how long did you get to a point where things were, you know, you're starting to think, oh gosh, this can't go on much longer like this without, you know, real damage? Was there any situation like that?
Oh, only about 8 or 9 of them.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What do you make of, I mean, you don't have to comment on this, but it's just really interesting to hear from someone, you know, in it, dealing with that. What did you make of the way that was handled when it came, let's say when it comes to business?
Yes.
What do you reckon? Did the country handle that right? Have we paid quite a price for that?
Which part? You mean the COVID?
The way that we operated through those years where everything was locked down, and you know that the economy, the money was being printed, travel was difficult at the time. I guess it was like that around the world. But you know, do you think we handled it?
I'm not going to express my own personal opinions on that, which are pretty strong, but we went from escalation to devastation in a short period of time.
Yeah.
And we were in a market area for us, which was, we were the only company in New Zealand or Australasia manufacturing air filter media at the time COVID came down. So we put our hands up and said, we're going to help the country. And you can read about that in the press and in the government papers. But and then we had that canned, and we ended up in a market sector where the world was went from total undersupply to total oversupply. And when you're a small little company down in New Zealand, there's not a lot you can do. So we just decided to, we just decided to cut our losses and go back to what we were before COVID.
Yeah, gotcha. Mm. Now, when it comes to Blue Air, Do you keep doing the manufacturing? Do you do the manufacturing of the filters, or is it just the technology that they use and they kind of do the manufacturing? Well, you supply the wool? How does it work?
Oh, there's multiple steps. Hey, you got to grow the wool, right? So we have people do that for us now, and you got to clean it. And so we've got technology around that. Then we've got a factory here behind me in Ellerslie here in Auckland, and which is quite a large piece of manufacturing kit. And that makes the filter media, which we put into big rolls and we load it up into containers and send it offshore to them to their, what's called a conversion plant, where it's made into the filter element, which is the thing the customer will buy and pop into their device. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just it slides in kind of.
Yeah, just like a rectangular thing the size of a book probably, or it might be a round one, might be a square one. There's all different types. And there's filters in everything in the world. There's filters in medical devices, there's filters in air conditioning units, there's filters in air purifiers, there's filters in cars and houses, everywhere.
Yeah, people don't give much thought to it, right? But
lot of things you can't see. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
You know? It's just something you throw away, but it's very, very important for your health.
I want to see an advert for Latico with the spaceship, you know, landing on the moon at some point. You know, like a bit of marketing with that would just be fantastic.
Oh, don't hold your breath. It's got to get there first.
There. We've done it. We did it 50, 60 years ago. Do it again, surely.
Mm, but NASA is for us is a gift that keeps on giving, because there isn't anything else that touches the performance of what we do in this area, and it takes a long time for them to get to the moon. So
yeah,
and a lot of money. So it's just the highest profile validation for our product that we could ever hope for.
Yeah, well, one small step for – you could work that line into something, you know.
Oh, it's one small step for a lamb. A lamb. Yeah. One small step for a lamb.
Yeah. Or, I'm stepping off the lamb.
Or one giant leap for ram kind.
Yeah, there you go. You've already got it. What's the potential ultimately of this for your company, Nick? I mean, how big can it get?
We only know what we know now, and in terms of the technology, and we're keeping on developing technology. We know we've got a massive opportunity here. Potentially, we've got the ability to say that people should be investing in growing sheep. And we should be able to look at, say, genetics and have genetics close to market. So New Zealand-owned genetics close to market to reduce the transport costs and the energy costs and all that stuff. But the ownership of that technology is based here, and obviously it's significantly large.
Yeah. Sounds really, really cool. I've really enjoyed talking with you, Nick. What an incredible...
No problem.
Product, project, thinking, and there will be many of our listeners doing a cheer for wool again, I think.
Well, I hope so. It's justified. So we're on a high, and we're looking to drive it really hard and really fast.
Nick Davenport, founder and managing director of Lanaco. Thanks for coming on, Nick.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.